This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome back to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. On Monday, John Marvin, the brother of Alex Murdaugh, took the stand in the family murder trial in South Carolina. During his testimony, the prosecutor questioned him about his involvement in the investigation and his understanding of his brother's actions and statements. Let's take a listen.
Thank you, Your Honor. That's all the questions I have. Please,
good afternoon, Mr. Murdaugh.
Good afternoon.
I think you'd agree with me that no matter which way you cut it, your family suffered a great tragedy, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
And
including the death of my dad and the sickness of my mom. I mean, it's tough.
And I'm sorry you and your family's been through this.
Well, thank you.
All right. And I think you testified a little while ago about the cooperation you and particularly your brother provided SLED. Is that correct?
Did I provide cooperation with SLED?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And to your knowledge,
I have and will continue to.
All right. And to your knowledge, your brother was providing cooperation to SLED as well, correct?
I believe everyone in my family was. Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. And would you consider that cooperation full cooperation? Not only for yourself, but your brother as well, from what you have observed?
I mean, to me, full cooperation, yeah. I mean, it's wide open. You tell us what you need from me, and I'll provide it. And I told him I would provide it.
And from what you've observed, your brother was providing the same full cooperation as well, correct?
Yeah, so I believe any time that they ask to search something, any time they ask to do something, they ask for information, it typically came to me, and yes, I would provide it.
Okay, I'm asking about your brother right now. I understand you have. But to your knowledge, did your brother provide full cooperation? Or did he tell you he was providing full cooperation?
Well, he didn't tell me, but it appeared to be obvious that by him giving them access to anything they asked for, that he was.
Okay. So when did you first learn that your brother was down at the kennels just before the murders? 2 days ago with the rest of us?
No. So obviously I went for an interview with SLED, the one I told you about where we talked about the shirt, talked about the blood, all that. That was the reason for me being there, was to hear that audio. And I saw the kennel, and of course at that point I heard his voice, and I knew that was him.
Okay. You knew that was him when you saw that video, correct?
That's correct.
When I listened to it. Right. And do you recall the date of that interview when you first listened to that video?
I do not.
All right. Would you disagree with me if I said it was August 12th of 2022?
I have no way to agree or disagree.
Or at least during the month of August of 2022?
Again, I'm sure they have my interview recorded for that date. But
all right. Before August of 2022, at that interview when you heard your brother's voice at the kennels, had he ever told you that he was down there just prior to the murders?
No, sir.
Did he ever tell you that afterwards, after you listened to that video?
No, sir. And I'm trying to think if we've been able to have an opportunity to even speak.
Okay. All right. So you would agree that if he had not told SLED that was not full cooperation, correct? If he had not told SLED that he was at the kennels just before the murders, he had not actually been fully cooperative.
What's your question?
Would you agree that that is not full cooperation?
By him not telling SLED that he was at the kennel?
Correct.
I would say that yes, he lied.
Okay. All right. So I don't want to go through the whole kind of vehicle shell game that we talked about earlier. It's confusing probably to me most of all, but let's just focus on, what was Paul's normal daily driver? What vehicle did he drive on a daily basis?
On a normal basis, he drove a white F-150 Platinum.
Okay.
And let me confuse you a little bit more. Okay. As I drive the identical truck.
Okay. All right. So you testified that Paul's F-150 Platinum was at Jimmy Butler's over the weekend, correct?
It was being worked on at Jimmy Butler's. That's correct.
And then Monday, there's a series of car swaps. I don't want to go through them, but at the end of the day, you end up in the F-250 farm truck, correct?
That's correct.
Right. And Paul ends up in your F-150 Platinum.
Ultimately, he does. He drives a mom's car back to Alameda.
Right. I know there's several swaps.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
I'm just kind of talking at the end of the day. and he drove your F-150 back to Moselle, excuse me, that night, correct?
To Moselle, yes, sir.
Right. You testified that you came over later that night after Alex had called you about the murders, correct?
That's correct.
Where was your truck parked when you first got there? And we'll talk about how you got there in a minute, but where was Paul's truck?
Well, so first of all, that night.
Your truck, I'm sorry.
That's right. I know what you're saying. So when I got there, we didn't go anywhere near the house. I went straight to where everything was happening.
Okay.
As we went to the house later that night, I saw my truck. So that's probably 4 in the morning, whatever time we were, 3 or 4 in the morning. Mm-hmm. It was parked in front of the house, normally where you would park cars.
Okay. So just kind of out straight out the front door?
That's correct.
And the keys that Paul had been using, do you recall, were they left in the truck or have any recollection of where those keys might have ended up?
Well, they were sitting in the ignition. Okay. I mean, same place I always leave them.
Okay.
Because I drove it to Alameda that night.
All right. And meanwhile, you were in that F-250 farm truck, right?
For a short period of time.
And that, refresh my memory, is that white as well? Or is that
it's white as okay. well, yes, sir.
And it's broke down on you on the way to Moselle, that, and correct?
That is correct, on Highway 63.
All right. And you left it on the side of the road, correct?
I did.
Okay. And I think, did you call Chief Alexander at that point? Or?
Well, we were riding, you know, we were driving separate cars, but together.
Okay.
And so at that point, he had gotten in front of me, and I had to call him to tell him to turn around.
Okay. And he came back and picked you up.
Came back, and I jumped in his car.
You left the truck
or whatever. It's Suburban.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to talk over you. My apologies. And you left the F-250 there on the side of the road.
I did.
Okay. All right. And rode with Chief Alexander to the property?
That's correct.
All right. Were you aware that your brother, Alex, had loaned Chief Alexander money at several points over the past couple of years?
I was not.
All right. And you testified that you learned of your brother's opioid addiction the weekend of Labor Day of 2021. Is that correct?
Well, that's when it started coming out, yes, sir.
Okay. So did you have any idea that he had a opioid or drug problem prior to that?
Prior to that, I did not.
Okay. So from your observations of him on a daily basis, he seemed to be sober at most times or not under the influence of any? Did you ever observe
right.
him?
Well, keep in mind now, so again, I'm not a lawyer in the firm. I live in Beaufort, so I don't see him daily.
Okay.
But our encounters usually would be during non-working hours.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, yes, I had no reason to think he was on pills.
Okay. All right. He's able to function pretty normally on a daily basis, to your observations?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay. So let's talk about the morning of June 8th. You said that you were the first person over to the house at Moselle that morning. Did I understand that?
That's
correctly?
Correct.
And you're the first person inside the house at that point?
That's correct.
Okay. And so do you recall when Blanca Simpson got there?
I don't.
Okay.
What I can tell you is I was the last to leave the house and the first to come back in.
So she would have gotten there some point after you?
Yes, sir.
That morning,
and I've heard in testimony that instead of going to Moselle, she went to Alameda.
Mm-hmm. But when she came to Moselle, it would have been after you, correct?
I think the other folks were there as well. Yeah, but well after me.
Okay. And you testified about being in that, I guess some folks call it the gun room, when Slade came in and started looking at some of those guns in the gun room, correct?
That's correct. Well, I wasn't in the gun room. I was in the main part of the house.
Okay. Did you ever go into the gun room while Sled was in
there? I did.
Okay. Because I think there's a video and evidence, and we're not going to go dig it up, but of Sled with body camera footage, and I think you do appear a bit.
I think so. I think probably what best recollection I have is I was in the main part of the house with Alec and family, and someone came and told me they were there and that they wanted to look around.
Okay.
And of course, I went to make sure that they had full access.
When you were in there, do you recall who was in there with you other than the SLED agents? Because there were several other people, correct?
Well, I don't recall. Without seeing the video, I saw the video. I saw Mark Ball. I saw Lee Cope. I saw the agent McAllister. But I don't think I would have remembered that.
Okay. But there are several attorneys in there. though, at a minimum, correct?
Friends and attorneys. Friends. Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Was Chris Wilson in there at that time?
You know, I don't remember. Okay. I don't have any recollection of him being there.
Okay. All right. And then let's go to June 10th when Slick came over to, I believe it was Greenfield where they came.
That's correct.
It was an interview. It was you, Buster, Randy, Alex. I guess that's four, right? Is that all who were interviewed that day to your recollection?
Randy, me, Alec, and Buster. That's correct.
Okay. I think you testified that they didn't want to come inside. Is that what you testified to?
Well, I don't think they didn't not want to come inside because of any particular reason. I just think they wanted to get about their business.
So you don't recall?
I offered for them. I offered to come in, use the restroom, anything of that nature, drink water, anything like that. But they, okay. They did not.
You don't recall Lieutenant Gint coming in and introduce himself?
Inside the lodge? I do not.
Okay. All right. And you've either been interviewed or sat in several interviews by SLED over the last few years, correct?
I've been in a few, yes, sir.
Okay. And I'm going to direct your attention to October 12th of 2010. Let me make sure I have that date correct. Or excuse me, not 2010. That would have been 2021. And I believe Sled came to your house that day. Do you recall that?
I do recall Sled coming to my house.
Okay.
I can't tell you that's the date, but they certainly came.
This would have been the day that they interviewed both Buster and your wife that day. Does that help you out?
It does. I remember them coming. It was Jeff, Agent Croft, and I believe Agent Ryan Kelly.
Okay. You sat into both those interviews, correct, with both Buster and your wife?
Well, I think the interview with one was an interview for Buster, okay, and one was an interview with me and my wife.
Okay. All right. So you
thought, that's the way I thought it was.
Okay.
I didn't think it was three interviews.
All right. And do you recall during that October 12th interview the subject of this blue jacket coming up with Buster? Specifically, I'm talking about the one with Buster.
The conversation at my house?
Yes.
I do not recall it coming up.
You don't recall Sled bringing up, asking Buster about the blue jacket on October 12th?
I do not recall that.
So you don't recall his response?
I don't recall him bringing up a jacket.
Okay. Do you recall Buster responding that he did not recognize the blue jacket that was presented to him?
I don't recall a blue jacket being discussed.
And I think you also looked at it, and you don't recall.
They did not show me a blue jacket. There was no blue jacket discussion in that interview, to my knowledge.
Okay. Let's see. One big court's in the room. Do you recall Buster's response in that interview to being asked if that could be Randolph's jacket, to him saying, if it's over $15, no, it wasn't?
Objection, Your Honor. Hearsay what Buster said. He's asking if you recall what Buster said.
I sustain the objection.
And then you agreed with what Buster said right afterwards. You don't recall that?
No, Mr. Conner. What I'm telling you is I don't recall any discussions of a blue jacket in that interview. I just don't recall that. I don't. So you asking me that, I'm just telling you I don't know of any discussions about a jacket in that interview.
Okay. All right. You testified about driving up to rehab, I think that Monday after Labor Day, or excuse me, detox, correct?
It was detox, that's correct.
And you said your brother kind of woke up startling as if from a dream. Is that what you testified to?
No, sir. Okay. I said that when I was Randy and I were driving him from detox to the rehab facility down, and that was down in Orlando, Florida,
okay,
is when that happened.
All right. And you said, and again, I wanted to make this as clear as we can, you said you thought that he was waking up in response to a dream about the night of June 7th. Is that, do I understand that correctly?
That is the way that's what it appeared to be to me. And that's, okay. Of course, I can't tell you what he was dreaming, but that's certainly what it appeared to me.
So you're not saying that because he said that, right?
That's right. Okay. He didn't wake up and say that. It was just such a startling, just the way he woke up out of his sleep. It was just so startling. It was fear. It took him several seconds to realize that whatever he just saw was not real, or was not, he was not living it.
Okay. You testified about the day of June 7th and the taking your dad to the hospital, him getting admitted, correct?
I did.
And that you and your brother Andy were sending out multiple group texts about your dad's status. Is that correct?
Well, I sent a text, and I believe Randy sent one as well.
Okay. And
along with phone calls. I know Randy and I discussed it on the phone as well.
And if I understood your testimony correctly, and you said that June 7th is actually kind of a hopeful day. Is that based off of what the doctors were saying?
Well, yes. Based on all the bad news that he's been receiving, it was one little piece of hope that, you know, certainly if the doctor would have said at that point, you know, you're going home on hospice tomorrow, it would have been, that would be the worst case. But him saying that there was hope that it was pneumonia and not the cancer, that there was some breathing treatments that may help, it gave us some hope.
And you sent out at least one group text with this information, correct, to your family members, right?
I know I sent one. I could have sent another, but I know there was one.
Okay. And do you recall if your brother was included in that? Alex, specifically, was included?
You know, I saw the record showing it, and so, yes. Okay. I believe it was my family, and I think it was just our family, actually.
Mm-hmm. And so there was hope, at least on the afternoon of June 7th, that your dad, who had pneumonia, which could potentially be treated, and there was a little bit of hope about that, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So if your brother had told Janine Seckinger during that day that your dad was taking a major turn of the worse, that would not be truthful, correct?
That would be correct. And the testimony I heard is he didn't say that.
He didn't say what?
He didn't say it was terminal or dire or whatever, whatever you're saying.
Are you based off of Alex's testimony?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So if Janine Seckinger...
Well, I can tell you this. If somebody said that day that it was terminal, one of two people was wrong, or both.
Okay. All right. So if Janine Seckinger was told that...
If Janine Seckinger said that, she was wrong.
Well, were you present for any conversations between your brother and Janine Seckinger on June 7th?
I wasn't.
One last thing, Mr. Murdaugh. Would you say that the Murdaugh name and legacy is something that's important to you and your brothers?
Yes, I think any family's name and legacy is important to them. Do I think my family's name is more important than yours or any of y'all's? No, I don't.
Okay. But it's important to your brother as well, correct?
I think he would feel the exact same way as what I just said, that all families are important.
Okay. No problem. No.
Any redirect?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. You may step down.
Defense rests, Your Honor.
That's the latest that we have for you right now. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts so you don't miss any of our breaking updates and discussions on the case as we have them. My name is Tony Bruschi. You can follow me on Twitter @TonyBPod. Until next time, for all of us, thanks for listening.